Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Art Halverson is a real estate developer and a former career Coast Guard pilot. He's also a Tea Party-backed candidate taking a second crack at unseating 8-term Republican Congressman Bill Shuster in the April 26th primary. What got Halverson into the race for Pennsylvania's 9th congressional district? What does he stand for? And what are his chances? We'll talk about that and more. Congressman Shuster was also invited to be on this program, but declined the invitation. Art Halverson, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Patty. Thank you very much.
As I mentioned, this is your second consecutive bid to unseat Bill Shuster in the Republican primary. You lost to him in 2014 with 34.5% of the vote to his nearly 53%. Why do you think your chances are better this time around? And maybe more importantly, what got you into this race in the first place?
Well, the first question, the chances are better this time because it's a two-man race instead of a three-man race. Our experience level, of course, has gone up. I had never run for any office before, not even dog catcher. And so this was a new experience 2 years ago. So now we're able to leverage what we invested and what we learned last time and apply it to this time. We have a much more experienced and professional team that's working with us. And frankly, I think my opponent is weaker. He's continued to do the wrong things, and we're getting stronger. And look, what it comes down to in politics is name recognition. My opponent has, with his dad, 44 years worth of name recognition and being on the ballot.
They've represented the Pennsylvania's 9th congressional district since 1973.
That's right. They've owned the district, and I want to break that grip that they have on the people. And what you have to do, of course, is get your name recognized. And so that's a lot of what we're doing. By going door to door, we're meeting folks in their homes, in the marketplace, wherever they are, in churches, and getting our name out there and what we stand for.
More importantly, though, why do you want to be a member of Congress?
Well, I would say that I don't want to be a member of Congress, but I feel like I need to. The country is absolutely going in the wrong direction, and as a career leader in the military and in business and in various parachurch organizations, I felt like I needed to step up and apply that leadership to try to turn our country around. Nobody else would step up. When I realized what my Republican Party was doing, I felt like they were betraying us. We put the House and the Senate both back in the hands of our Republican Party, but we left the same leaders in place. That's a strategic mistake. And so as I watched what they were doing, I thought we could do better. I couldn't find anyone else to run. I know I can do better, and so that's why I'm running.
The reality is, you know, if you look back at the midterm elections in 2012, 90% of U.S. House and Senate members who sought re-election won their seats. And that is despite low approval ratings, in fact, historically low approval ratings for Congress. And what that says to some is that Americans are dissatisfied with Congress as a whole, but not necessarily with their own representative. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's slowly changing. Polls since that time have shown that people are becoming more dissatisfied with their own as they discover what their own congressman is doing. But it's hard to do that because the incumbent has extraordinary ability to influence the news. He should be showing up at interviews like this, like I am. But in our case, in the 9th District, our congressman doesn't do that. He's running on the momentum. And frankly, some people think his dad is still in office. They call him Bud. And so it shows that there are a lot of low-information voters. That's not to discredit anyone. It's just to say people have busy lives. And if there's not a primary challenger, how can they know?
One of the biggest barriers to running for office is money. And on average, it takes about $1.6 million to win a House seat. That's more than 344% more than it took in 1986. Bill Shuster went into this cycle with $2.6 million. Where are you in the money game?
Well, we've raised about $80,000 in the first campaign, and we've raised a similar amount this time. I've loaned my campaign from my own business operating income to boost our numbers. We've over the course of the two campaigns, we've probably spent about $300,000.
As you mentioned a moment ago, you've never held public office. How has your experience as a helicopter pilot with the U.S. Coast Guard and as a real estate developer prepared you for a seat in Congress?
Sure. The issue is leadership. I've had leadership experience. The Coast Guard Academy, where I went to college, was a leadership laboratory. For 4 years, you prepare to lead in the military. And I ended up, after 29 years of active duty service, of leading the Coast Guard, not as the commandant, but in significant areas of responsibility, including Chief of Plans and Policy for the United States Coast Guard. So I did all the planning, facility planning, business planning, budget planning, and then was put in charge after 9/11 of reorganizing the entire service. So a significant responsibility, which required extraordinary teamwork and leadership skills to respond to that grave threat and the need to transform our service to respond to 9/11, after 9/11. So I was also on a team that stood up the Department of Homeland Security. I helped write the strategic plan. I helped develop the budget process for that department. And then on business, I started a business from scratch after my military service. So I learned what was required to lead in that sphere as well. And that's what's required and that's what's missing in Washington is we have a bunch of career politicians who have done something in the past. Some are attorneys, some are used car dealers, some are, you name it. They come from all backgrounds. But leadership is a thing I think that's missing. And regardless of how they got into office, they're failing us right now. They're not applying leadership. They have no strategy. They have not cast a vision for us. And we need somebody to lead us who will do that and tell us how to get where we want to go and where we need to go. And that's missing, extraordinarily missing.
I want to talk a little bit about your education background. You have a degree in economics and management. You have an MBA. You have a master's of science in strategic studies. But on the personal side, you describe yourself as a devoted Christian, and many voters may know that you live in Man's Choice in Bedford County. You have six children. What else do you want voters to know about you?
Well, I want them to know that I love my country. That's why I served on active duty for 29 years as a search and rescue helicopter pilot. Before that, I drove a Coast Guard icebreaker for 2 years. The most important thing certainly is my belief in Jesus Christ as my Savior and the Christian worldview that comes with that, adherence to the Holy Scriptures, living a life that is honorable and ethical and is an example to other people. I've been married to my wife, Paula, for 38 years. And we have six amazing kids that God has blessed us with, one of whom we adopted from South Korea. She's a leader in the State Department and is stationed in Madrid, Spain. We have nine grandkids and are concerned about the future of our country because those nine grandkids are not facing the same type of opportunities that we had. I know how important it is for America to be strong and for it to continue to shine the light of hope and freedom for the world. I know that the world looks up to America. But we have sort of peaked, and we are sliding down the other side, and I hate to see that. And to the extent that I can do something about it, I will.
I want to find out what it is you want to do, but I want to begin by saying that according to a Gallup poll, Democrats and Republicans actually agree on four top issues this election season, and that is the economy, terrorism, jobs, and health care. If elected, what issue will be your top priority, and why?
Probably national security is something. There's a number of top priorities, so depending on what committee I'm in and where I'm able to caucus, of course, we'll have a lot to do with where I can have influence. But let's talk about national security. We have a war. Some have already called it World War III against terrorism. It's an Islamic threat. It's based out of the Middle East by people who want to destroy America. My experience in the military leads me to conclude that we need to take the fight to them rather than be passive and wait, sort of lead from behind, which is the accepted policy in Washington today. We need to take the fight to ISIS.
So boots on the ground in Syria and elsewhere?
Well, actually, we're already doing that, but absolutely we need to do that. We should have never pulled those 10,000 peacekeeping troops out of Iraq, or ISIS would have never had an opportunity to raise its ugly head.
On your website, you indicate that you would block entry into the United States to people from 25 Islamic countries. Tell us a little bit more about what your position is on refugees, number one, and number two, on both legal and illegal immigration.
Sure. If a nation is exporting terror, as those 25 nations are, then we should not be receiving immigrants from those countries. Certainly, there are cases of diplomats that we want to maintain relations so that we can talk to those countries. And there's cases of asylum where there's persecution, particularly of Christians in those countries, where we would consider receiving those people into our country. But to have a fairly open refugee resettlement program going on with those, I think, is like a Trojan horse. We don't know who's coming in. And very likely there are, because we can't vet these people, there's no background, there's no paper trail. we should block access from the rank-and-file refugees from those countries. They're Middle Easterners. They should stay in the Middle East, as many of them are, in friendly countries. And I don't want them in the war zone, but also I don't want them here potentially importing terror.
Some of your positions on immigration, legal and illegal, your opponent, Bill Schuster, has called racist. How do you respond to that?
I haven't heard him charge me with racism, but I wouldn't be surprised. It's not racism. It's national security. It's simple common sense. Building a wall, enforcing our immigration laws. There's nothing racist about that. It's about sovereignty, and it's about protecting you and me and my grandkids.
You describe yourself as an authentic conservative. On the other hand, Bill Schuster says you are not a real conservative. And in fact, there's been a lot of name calling that we'll talk about in a moment. But what do you mean exactly by authentic conservative?
Well, an authentic conservative relies on the Constitution as our guidance, as our rule of law, that we would uphold and defend the Constitution. We would be fiscally sane. We would balance our budget. We would look out for the welfare of our people, the protection of our people, maintain our sovereignty, and operate in the world as an example for how freedom and opportunity should work. And provide, perhaps mentioned earlier, the city on a hill. Reagan's use of the term is a biblical reference, one of the parables. And that's our role. That's our responsibility, and I want to fulfill that. That's what conservatives are concerned about.
You've referred to God and the fact that you're a devoted Christian several times. And so I'm curious to know what your view is on the role that God or religion should play in American society.
Well, we have the Holy Bible. We have the Scriptures. It was a foundational document for our country. Much of the principles on the Constitution come from that scriptural source. It teaches us how to live with each other, how to love God and love our neighbors. And that's how it would guide me, in the sense that my ethical behavior, my morality, is based on those scriptural principles.
But many scholars would say that our Constitution isn't founded or based on Christianity, but rather on freedom of religion.
No, I'm saying that the premise, the principles that are embedded in that freedom, is God's idea. Most of the world is not free, and so freedom itself is a God-centered idea.
As I mentioned a moment ago, there's been a fair amount of name-calling in this election cycle in general, not just in this race between you and Bill Schuster. For his part, he's called you an unprincipled carpetbagger, and you have called him an idiot. What do you say to voters who have grown tired of this sort of thing?
My response that you cited there was after the debate on Saturday in Fayette County, after he went to a low level of making accusations against me, and my response afterwards to a reporter when asked about the debate, and in answer to a specific question, was to respond that way. I'll retract that. It shouldn't have been said. It's undignified, and I have my feelings about Mr. Schuster, but I don't need to call him names. My opponent has engaged in some behaviors that are reprehensible. They're unacceptable. I've called for him to resign. He fails to recuse himself because his girlfriend, who is a top airline lobbyist, is lobbying his committee. He says she doesn't lobby him. Well, okay. On paper, she doesn't lobby his staff in the committee and so forth. And of course, that's nonsense. There's a conflict of interest here that's bare and wide open for everybody to see. And it's what we don't trust about Congress. And he's the poster child for that. So I think he has to go. He's hurting our party. He's hurting our country. He's certainly hurting Congress.
The Conservative Review actually gave Bill Schuster a 49% or an F grade for his conservative voting record. I looked at that voting record. He got A's in just a couple of things, and this is what they were: his votes on pro-life legislation, immigration, Second Amendment rights, gun rights, and also traditional family value votes. He's against gay marriage, for example, and he voted against the Employment Non-Discrimination Act of 2007. On what issues do you most disagree with Mr. Schuster? And on the conservative issues, what most distinguishes you from him?
First, a comment on the things that you referred to that he's gotten A's on. That's because he generally votes the right way for those national organizations that are overseeing those issues. But he's no advocate. He's no voice. He does nothing to promote those values that are embedded in those issues. I would. On pro-life, for example, I will be a loud voice on the House floor and in the nation and in our district to represent the values of the people of the 9th Congressional District who are decidedly pro-life and want to see, for example, the passage of the 20-week pain-capable bill, which would prevent abortions after 20 weeks when babies feel pain. I mean, that's just common sense. But Mr. Schuster will not promote that.
Do you want to see abortion abolished, banned?
I think abortion is a crime against women and innocent children. And so to the extent that it is used by the media and by various groups to promote agendas, I want to stop that. I believe that the victims need to be protected, and I believe abortion creates a lot of victims.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guest is Art Halverson, a businessman and retired Coast Guard captain who is taking a second swing at unseating Republican Congressman Bill Schuster in the April 26th primary. Schuster, who was also invited to be on this program but declined the invitation, is seeking a ninth two-year term. Pennsylvania's 9th Congressional District is the state's most conservative. It includes all or parts of 12 counties, from Fayette County near Pittsburgh to the Susquehanna River in Harrisburg, and from the Maryland border north to Clearfield County. Let's get your thoughts on the issue of free trade or fair trade, which has been a hot issue in this year's presidential debates. Describe your views on opening the U.S. economy to the rest of the world.
Well, we have a global economy, and I'm a free trade person. Problem is, we don't have fair trade. So we need to actually change the term. It's not free. It's not fair. It's not balanced. In fact, one of our top adversaries in the world, China, has a $350 billion a year. Every year it sets a new record for the trade imbalance that goes to China. That's only the start of it. They manipulate their currency. They subsidize their manufacturing process. They subsidize transportation. It's an unfair playing field for America. So American companies are drawn there, obviously, because they can produce goods cheaper and send them both ways, assembled back to the United States, because our tax rates are 35% here in America. We're committing economic suicide. We're shipping our best companies overseas because that's the only place they can compete based on cost. 35%, highest in the world. It makes no sense, and Congress won't do anything to reduce that corporate tax rate. I think that we need bilateral trade agreements with friendly countries, with allies. Canada, like we do now, with Germany, with Japan, South Korea. We have plenty of countries in the world that have a similar worldview with us that we should be doing our trade with.
So what's your view on the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
I oppose it, and I oppose my challengers or Mr. Schuster's support for the fast-tracking of that. I thought that was an abdication of the congressional responsibility for oversight of the executive. Giving him fast-track authority virtually assures passage. That's the purpose of it, and I would seek to kill that authority.
It's been almost 7 years. It was 2009 when the federal minimum wage was raised to $7.25 per hour. And as you know, there's renewed push to raise the minimum wage, with unions asking for $15 an hour, President Barack Obama looking at a more moderate $10.10 per hour. In your opinion, should we raise the minimum wage again? And if so, to what dollar amount?
The minimum wage kills jobs. McDonald's just announced that they're going to install kiosks. It's putting people, starter positions, out of work. The people that's intended to help hurts the most. So, of course, unions want it, because once you've established or raised the lowest rung, everything, all the wages are on a ladder. You raise the lower step to the next step, every step above it has to go up. And so it's an inflationary tool. It's a bad idea. We have a minimum wage. We should keep that. If people want to pay more than that because they have a productive worker at the entry level, they can pay more, and they do. But the federal government getting involved in wage scaling is overall a bad idea. It backfires.
I want to get back for a moment to some of the individual rights issues. For instance, same-sex marriage. What's your view on it?
I oppose it. Marriage is between one man and one woman. It has been for 5,000 years. And for the Supreme Court on a 5-4 decision to change that definition, I think, is abhorrent.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, most Republicans are saying that they will not even consider a U.S. Supreme Court nominee by President Barack Obama, saying the people should choose and they want to wait until a new president is elected. Right. How do you feel about that stance, and what qualities would be necessary for you to support a Supreme Court nominee? What would you be looking for?
Right. Well, you say most Republicans, it's actually most Democrats. Last time when the other side was in charge, the Biden rule, it's been called, says that in the last year of the final term of a president, the seat should be held vacant. So that's what's being practiced here. It's just fair. It should go the same way for both parties. I don't think that should be codified, but as a principle, if one side's going to do it, the other side should be able to do it without criticism. What I would be looking for is somebody whose heart and soul is to love America and to understand and abide by the Constitution. So the record of their decisions should be clear that they're not legislating from the bench. Their purpose is to understand what the law is and then make decisions based on the constitutional law. There's too much agenda and politics in our judiciary now, to the point where people are advertising what they're going to decide about certain issues before they're even selected to be on the bench. And that's not blind justice. That's an agenda, and that's going to destroy our system.
Political infighting and gridlock on many serious issues has rendered Congress the least productive in legislative terms year after year since Congress began keeping these records. Why should voters have faith in your ability to get things done, which will require working across the aisle?
Well, first of all, we have too much government. So I want to address the premise that somehow government is going to fix it. Government doesn't fix anything. Government hurts us. We need to get government off our back. More government is worse government. Less government is better. The whole idea about America was that it would be in the hands of individuals, that families and businesses could grow. Not rely on the federal government to get bigger and give us stuff and do stuff for us. They actually hurt us.
Well, when you say government is bad and we should get it off our backs, if you look
at
things like—
No, I didn't say it was bad. I said it was too big and it needs to be limited and reduced. It's not bad. There's a place for government. Absolutely, we need government. That's the consent of the governed is the issue here. And the government has taken over and is forcing the governed to consent to the government.
You say that you would repeal Obamacare if you are elected. What role should government play in health care for Americans?
It should be minimized. There are certainly cases where there are hard cases where we need a common approach for certain people. But what we've done is taken the government and put them in charge of health care and taken it out of the hands of patients and their doctors, taken it out of the hands of the people, and taking it over, and it's not working out too well.
81% of Americans say that gun control will be an important issue in determining which congressional candidate they'll vote for. The federal government, as you know, hasn't passed any gun control measures since the 1994 Brady Bill. And in 2014, 21 states passed laws that expanded the rights of gun owners, allowing them to possess firearms in churches, bars, schools, and college campuses. What would you propose to reduce the number of violent gun crimes in the United States? And generally, what is your position on gun rights?
I'm a pro-gun advocate. I carry a weapon. My wife carries a weapon. I believe women should carry weapons because it's their best defense against criminals. Gun control is not solving the problem of gun crimes. All that gun control does is take guns out of the hands of responsible citizens. Gun-free zones, for example, we may have some crazy people out there. They're shooting people, but when you tell them where the gun-free zone is, they're not too crazy to know where that is, and they actually go there and they shoot people in theaters.
Why would rules take guns out of the hands of responsible people?
Because gun control is that's what is done. You can just look at the trend that's who it. The criminal is not going to follow the law. If you restrict the access to guns, it doesn't stop criminals. It stops law-abiding people from acquiring weapons for defense.
If you are elected, day one, what will you be focusing your attention on?
I'm very concerned about the situation with veterans in America. Many of the homeless people in America are veterans. There's a lot of hopelessness. There's 22, 23 suicides a day veterans. We have scandals now going on. We've been aware for 6 years in the Veterans Administration system of hospitals. It's a socialist form of health care. It doesn't work. I want to put power back in the hands of veterans so they can take a voucher, a health savings account type access to health care, and take it to doctors who can meet their needs. If the VA is that source, they can go there. If it's the local doctor, they can go there. Give them that freedom and that opportunity to get their needs met and not force them into a system that isn't responding to their needs.
Is there someone in the Democratic Party, someone in the House right now, with whom you think you could work on moving that sort of or any kinds of legislation that's important to you forward?
I can work with anybody. In the military, I work with Republicans and Democrats. You know, the party affiliation and the tags are unfortunate in our country, that they split people. We divide and conquer. This identity politics, we're all Americans. And so I will work with anybody, regardless of party, regardless of gender, regardless of anything, if they want to make America stronger and they have a similar concern that I do about certain problems, I will work with them.
We talked about money earlier, and of course, money isn't a guarantee that you'll win a re-election, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And as we discussed, incumbents typically outspend their opponents 3-1. You said in your case, it's probably 12-1.
Right.
That brings me to the question of campaign money. Mm-hmm. What, if any, campaign finance reform measures would you support if elected? And could we hold you to that?
Sure. I think that the Citizens United decision, where corporations can speak as people influence the government, is a bad idea. We're probably not going to get it turned around. But the access of lobbyists and big business to control and buy congressmen absolutely has to be changed. That's the problem. We call it the cartel. And that's why we have what we have, which career politicians who can stay in office with all this money because they have donors who own them, literally own them. And so I believe that campaign cash, while it's mandated by law to be available, should somehow be put into a fund where there's blind. We talk about blind justice. I think we need blind campaign giving so that there's not a quid pro quo, which is what we have going on right now, so that legislation literally written by a corporation or by their lobbyists is handed to, in our case, Mr. Schuster, is testified on their behalf in his transportation committee and is fast-tracked and passed when it's not in the best interest of the country.
Now, speaking of that, you have pledged to a self-imposed term limit. You
That's
say
correct.
If elected, you would not serve more than 3 2-year terms. You also say
three consecutive two-year terms,
right. And that you would also not accept a congressional pension.
That's correct. I don't think there should be a congressional pension, and I will lead by example. I will not accept it. By law, it's forced on congressmen, so it would have to be diverted into some other charity organization or something. I don't think they should be paid unless they pass a balanced budget. The idea of a citizen legislator was our founders' idea. They thought every 2 years people could be up for re-election, people would challenge them, and they would not want to serve more than 3 or 4 years anyway just because it's a long way from the farm. They want to get back to their business.
And in your case, you are on a farm.
And I am a businessman, and I want to get back to that and back to my grandkids and not do this the rest of my life. I worked in Washington for 5.5 years. I can start pick up right where I left off. I had some significant responsibilities there. And so I know what a cesspool it is, but somebody has to go down there. I couldn't find anyone else to do it, so I'm doing it.
And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Patty.
That was Art Halverson, a businessman and retired Coast Guard rescue helicopter pilot. He's taking a second swing at unseating 8-term Congressman Bill Schuster, who represents Pennsylvania's 9th Congressional District. Schuster was also invited to be on this program, but declined our invitation. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.